Hello everyone, this is a PSA review call and you're going to be listening to what it takes to kind of work through with a societal. These two we have up in front of you are the societal achiever and achiever societal, so you got it kind of both ways there. And today we're going to be talking with Roxanne, so these are her two clients, and she's going to give you a kind of idea of what it was like to work with them, how it started out, what the process was like, and then at the end, too, if there was anything that she had to work through to get them to get to that deal. So I'm going to go ahead and let Roxanne take over and get into it. So anytime you're ready.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, Megan. So I guess before we get started, I just want to note that I am a Belonger Societal, so it's actually more comfortable for me to work with societals and belongers than it is achievers and emulators, so I feel like this flows for me more naturally, and I don't have to look and dig as much. But with that said, I'll just say that, you know, my take on societals, you know, since I'm in San Diego, there's a lot of high tech here, a lot of pharmaceutical, biomedical. So I work with a lot of societals, because societals are usually in a line of work where they want to feel like they're providing for the common good. You know, they're usually trying to, you know, cure cancer one of these is actually a physician. Not only is he a medical doctor, but he's a PhD. So societals are also usually highly intelligent. The other one is an engineer. They seem to be very systematic and methodical in their research. And so getting kind of into the assessment, the first thing that I look at with them, you know, aside from all the remarks that they type in, I always read those very thoroughly. They usually rate themselves pretty low on their sales ability and their sales interest on page 2 of the QSR. So I always look at that, and then I look at the fourth page, let's see here. It's actually three pages ahead, where it's got the client at a glance. And usually their sales potential, I rarely run into a low sales potential. One of these, Jim, was average, and David was above average, even though David rated himself a 5 for ability and interest, and Jim rated himself a 4. So the first thing that I do usually when I get on my call with them to go over the assessment is we talk about sales and what sales means to them, and it's usually, you know, the used car salesman that they're thinking of. So both of these gentlemen are very personable and outgoing. The other thing that I do with them is I always read the risk index, because the risk index, which we don't have up, I don't think, right, Megan? Risk index is, it'll say to me, so I always read their primary fears. So I've got David's up here, and I'm just going to read from that. So being ignorant or lacking knowledge, being uninformed or unaware, being manipulated, and not making a difference. So David is a societal achiever. And I also look at the things to avoid with them, which is, you know, faster, smooth-talking sales pitch, using jargon and acronyms, not recognizing or invalidating their intelligence and experience, ignoring fear or manipulation. So I always validate them, their level of intelligence. I validate their fears. I try not to embellish with them because I tend to do that. And I always give them a lot of data, and it's just my process with them is very methodical. But once again, I'm very similar to them, so it's easy for me. Sometimes I get very impatient with them because when I'm having my follow-up calls, they are very, you know, they've got their notes out. It's never a 15-minute call. It's almost always a 30-minute call. And with David, my calls were almost an hour every single time. So if you're an achiever, this is going to drive you nuts. It drives me nuts sometimes, and I'm a Belonger Societal. So there are times where I literally just have to kind of get up and walk around while I'm listening to them. I'm usually taking thorough notes, but they are very, very, very methodical and analytical. What else? Think of what else I can say to you. Any questions or anything that I'm not touching on, Megan?
Well, so how did you meet both of them?
I met one of them networking. There's a group here called McDermott and Bull. I met Jim networking. And I met David at Lee Heck Harrison. And the interesting thing about him is we really connected when I did my presentation. He actually asked to come to the office and meet me for coffee. And we sat down and chatted. And he really had just separated and really needed to decompress. And we joked about him. He wanted to go to Italy with his daughter and learn how to make Chianti. So the joke was, you know, go and stomp grapes with your daughter and, you know, let's, you know, meet back up. He also was torn between wanting to stay here or living closer to his children. One is in Chicago and one is in Atlanta. And long story short, he was interested enough just through chatting that he wanted to engage with Menchie's. And then after he researched it a little bit further, he decided that it wasn't worth the effort for him because he wasn't going to be able to make enough money. Now, if you look at the let's see if he filled out his – if you look at his financials, his net worth is $7.4 million. So he is in his 50s. He did not – he's in a situation where he didn't have to work. There's only two reasons he started this business. One was, you know, he's young and has energy and he's smart and he wants to stay engaged and relevant and be involved, but he didn't want to work full time. And secondly, the only reason financially that he was doing this is to be philanthropic. So he wants to give the money away. But it needed to be – the money that he made needed to be worth the time and effort that he put into this, even if it was semi-absentee. So when what ended up happening is he moved to Atlanta and he built a home and he reached back out to me after that. So a year later he reached out and said, can you help me now? And he did not want – he was not interested in food in any way, shape, or form, but he ended up going with Medici and he bought a three-pack. And the reason he did that was he really liked them when he engaged with Menchie's and liked what they stood for because, you know, he's a societal and that's important to him. And it was worth the effort for him because he had a clear idea of what the numbers were. So, and his, if you look, his emulator is right there as well. So he is a, his highest is societal, the next is achiever, but almost exactly neck and neck with achiever is emulator. So he wanted something where he could, in his own words, show off a little bit and get recognition. So this was kind of his way of doing that. And I think it's ironic that I didn't even realize this until I pulled these both out, that both of these actually invested in Medici. That was what they both ended up doing. Jim did it here, one unit in San Diego, and David did that in Atlanta.
Interesting.
So did I answer that question thoroughly enough?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm thinking, so I know a lot of people think that societal, since they have such a need to learn and they want to really understand all the different things and different parts that are involved, they could get kind of stuck in the research due diligence process. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that either with these two examples or in general, since it seems like you work with a lot of societals where they are doing their due diligence, they're doing the validation, and it seems like they're not getting anywhere because they just want to learn so much?
You know, I address that up front with everybody because, once again, there's so many societals here. I talk about, I'll think of the term in a minute, but it's, you know, they can, you get to a point where you've spoken to enough franchisees that you're going to start hearing the same thing over and over and over again from them. Now, of course, there weren't a whole lot of franchisees to speak to with Medici, but they did look at other concepts. And, you know, most of them are aware that they can get bogged down in the details. So we talk about that up front. Look, you're going to get to a point where you can't look at one more piece of data. You can't run one more spreadsheet. You know, there's a point where you're going to have to pull the trigger. You have to fish or cut bait. And I always tell them that I'm their coach, not their cheerleader. So there's going to be times where I might say something that's going to challenge them, or, you know, a coach needs to kind of point out something if it's not working right or call you out. So we talk about that up front so that when it happens in the process and I call them out on it and I'll say, you know, remember we talked about this in the beginning. So I can use that to kind of prod them along. But they're smart enough to aware that they're like that as well. So I didn't have that problem with these two at all.
Great. Okay. And so as you're working through and they're going through validation and they get to discovery day, is there anything at the end? I know that we talk about this isn't necessarily buyer motives, but kind of like optionals where they get to the end and they're like, but what else is there? Have you ever noticed anything with a societal in particular where is there any kind of challenges or special things kind of toward the end that you try to make them aware of again or remind them of or to kind of prevent ahead of time if you can?
So one of the things I say to them in the very beginning of the process, and then I talk about this again before they go to Discovery Day, and keep in mind that these two both worked with Michael Mudd, who just happens to be a complete rock star and is very good at closing. So it helps when you're working with somebody like that tremendously, because societals love to know what their next steps are, and they usually follow the process. So I always pre-frame Discovery Day that this is the end of the process. You know, once you get back from Discovery Day, you've got maybe 7 to 10 days to make a decision. And no is a decision, and no is completely okay. And I think that makes them, you know, it takes the pressure off. You know, the franchisor is just looking for a yes or a no. If it's no, that's great. Let's make it a quick no and not a long, drawn-out no. And I always tell them that the franchisor is looking for decision makers. So if you get back from Discovery Day and you've gone through the whole entire process and done your due diligence properly, you shouldn't need more than a week to 10 days to make a decision when you get back, or something was wrong in the process. So I always make sure they're ready to go to Discovery Day. So on a scale of 1 to 10, they should at least be an 8 before they go to Discovery Day. And I let them know that the very final things to do should be having the franchise agreement reviewed. If they haven't had that done yet, I usually encourage them to try to get that done before they go, or at least have their appointment set up before they go, so that they're having that done right when they get back. And then if they haven't had an accountant look at their pro forma yet, or they do want to talk to an accountant, they can do that as well. But I also encourage them to do that ahead of time. So they're very clear on that 7 to 10 days post-discovery day. And if it goes longer than that, I always tell them, look, if you don't make a decision, the franchisor will make it for you, and they're going to move on to somebody else. Because now they doubt your ability to make a decision. You're not a decision maker, and that's not attractive to them.
Mm-hmm. All right, and I'm sure that lights the fire after that. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Is there any particular parts in the PSA? I know that you mentioned that this feels more familiar with you than perhaps an Achiever emulator, and that you might dive a little bit more deeper into the PFA just to make sure that you're aligning with that particular buyer motive that isn't familiar. But as you're going through here, have you ever needed to go back to one of these and just kind of see, like, maybe in the meta program or maybe in the leadership area or anything like that, where you've gone back and been like, oh, I didn't realize that this is where we're having some disconnect? Or do you feel like for the most part when you go through the PFA, you kind of look at what they are, how they scored on the client at a glance, and then kind of go from there?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty thorough in going through the assessment initially. I have a call with them to go over it. And then before I go into a meeting with someone, I don't know how much time. I've worked with Paige, so I've seen his process. He trained me. And I think his process is probably a little bit quicker than mine. I actually, when I'm prepping for them, I start the day before, and I'm probably prepping for a good hour, hour and a half. I sit with their assessment and their resume. I go through everything. I highlight. I make notes. And then I come up with my long list of franchises that I think might be a good fit for them. I go through the entire list of our portfolio, and I look at every. I literally look at every single one, scan through it, and think about could this be a fit. So I'm pretty thorough. So when I get into a meeting with them and I'm in process with them, I don't think there's a whole lot of surprises. I also look for the red flags on everybody. Compliance. Is their compliance low? That's a red flag for me. If their sales potential is low, that's a red flag, especially if they don't have money to invest in brick and mortar, something that could be more of a marketing business. I think a lot of the lower investments require more boots on the ground and networking, so we'll talk about that. Or if it comes up under business development, if it comes up contractor or entrepreneur, that's a huge red flag for me. So we'll talk about that up front. And I'll let them know that at any point, I say this to everyone, but especially to somebody that comes up like that, I'll say to them that my concern is that franchising is not going to be comfortable for them, and I'm going to be looking as we go through the process for anything to pop up. If something does pop up, we're going to talk about it, and if at any point I think that we're on the wrong path or I don't think that I can help them, I'm going to let them know. And I ask them, do you agree now that you won't get mad at me when that happens?
Okay. Great.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, is there anything else that you feel would be important to kind of let people know as they work with Societal through the process, other than just kind of, because I know the normal, the struggle basically is patience. And trying to understand that they need something to be a certain way, or like everyone has their own certain process and needs a certain amount of time to digest that information the way that they normally would. So other than kind of the things that we're used to knowing about Societals, is there anything else you want to toss in there just for general help on getting through PFAs that come in like this?
I would say, honestly, to read the comments on the risk index. Because I think that gives you a lot of detail on what they're afraid of, what to avoid when you're working with them, and then it gives you some suggestions as well. If you're an emulator or an achiever working with Societal, I know that's difficult because it's uncomfortable, just like working with an achiever is uncomfortable for me, and I have to really be on top of my game. So I always read the risk index because I think that gives good points. Going back to working with Societals, I would also read the page that talks about, page 6, that talks about their value sets and motives. And I also scan, I kind of go through and scan the needs and wants in a business and businesses best suited. And sometimes when we're in our meeting, that doesn't totally jive with what they're telling me. So I'll usually kind of lean towards, what they're saying versus what's on the assessment. But I think just really, especially with Societals, once again, they're usually highly educated and highly intelligent. And I kind of work with their ego on that. Not obviously so, but it has to come from, you have to be, it can't sound salesy. I mean, it's got to be honest and legitimate. So I find things that I like about them, and I try to, boost their ego without them knowing that I'm doing that. And I always acknowledge their concerns. I don't ever brush over their concerns and make it seem like it's not important.
Awesome. Okay. Great. Well, guys, there you have it. This has been a PFA review of the Societal. And again, Roxanne, thank you so much for pitching in and telling us what it was like to work with them. I will put these two PFAs along with the recording on FranConnect in the PFA review section of training in the library. And that will be all. Thank you so much for listening.